Donc, Richard Bockham parlera en anglais, mais vous avez le texte français de sa conférence sur l'exemplier. Il est particulièrement célèbre dans le monde anglo-saxon parce qu'il est l'auteur de ce qu'on pourrait appeler un équivalent de « Que sais-je sur Jésus ?», c'est-à-dire « Jesus, a very short introduction », qui est vraiment un équivalent d'Oxford des « Que sais-je ?» et qui est donc quelque chose que tout le monde a entre les mains quand il s'intéresse à cette question, et dans lequel il écrit notamment « Puisque Joseph avait à charge au moins 7 enfants, Jésus, ses 4 frères et au moins 2 sœurs, il est possible qu'il se soit mis à la charpenterie pour compléter les revenus insuffisants de la ferme familiale. » Donc c'est sous ce prétexte que nous l'invitons aujourd'hui, puisqu'il défend des positions qui sont pas nécessairement majoritaires dans le monde universitaire, mais pour lesquelles il est connu depuis notamment la parution en 1990 de « Jude and the Relatives of Jesus in the Early Church », qui, sous prétexte au départ d'un commentaire sur l'épître de Jude, qu'il a relié à la mention en Marc 6,3 que Jude était le frère de Jésus. Et donc, il a expliqué comment le fait d'appartenir à la famille de Jésus au premier siècle, à la fin du premier siècle, a pu servir à justifier l'autorité apostolique dans un milieu palestinien et galiléen, à la différence des milieux qui dépendaient des apôtres, comme Pierre et Paul, par exemple. Il a aussi publié un article sur Nicodème que je mentionne puisque nous l'avions évoqué pour notre colloque précédent qui s'intitulait « Nicodemus and the Gurion Family ». Je mentionne aussi parce que ce sont les livres pour lesquels il est particulièrement connu et invité aujourd'hui dans différentes régions du monde, « Jesus and the Eyewitnesses » et un recueil d'articles « The Testimony of the Beloved Disciple » qui propose l'idée que l'évangile de Jean soit une œuvre cohérente, œuvre d'un seul auteur, le disciple personnel de Jésus, se désignant lui-même comme le disciple que Jésus aimait. Une thèse donc, qui est là aussi controversée et qui va nous permettre de susciter la discussion à partir de votre exposé sur Joseph. Merci beaucoup. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you for accepting to talk once again about Jesus' family. We are really happy to hear you and to learn what you have to tell us about the historical Joseph of Nazareth.
Thank you very much for your introduction. So the question I shall try to answer in the lecture is this. What could we know with reasonable probability about Joseph? I must say at once that there is a problem about the evidence. Most of what we think we know about Joseph comes from the accounts of the birth and infancy of Jesus in the Gospels of Matthew and Luke. Whatever one thinks about the historical reliability of the Gospels in general, and I would rate it highly, the birth and infancy stories belong to a rather different category from the other traditions of the Gospels. They are very difficult to verify historically, and many scholars would consider them largely literary creations by the evangelists. This is much too difficult a question to discuss here. So in what follows, I shall not discuss the historical plausibility of events in these narratives, such as the flight of Joseph and his family to Egypt, but I will assume that both evangelists preserve some core historical memories, such as Joseph's residence in Galilee and his marriage to Mary. I shall try to place such memories of Joseph within a historical context that will enhance their meaning and provide us with at least a plausible sketch of the historical Joseph. Of course, I shall not be able to avoid making historical judgments that others will find debatable. All history depends on judgments of plausibility. But let's begin in Nazareth. If we know anything at all about Joseph, we know that he came from Nazareth. The history of this small Jewish settlement in Lower Galilee began no earlier than the second half of the second century BCE. That was the period when Jewish emigrants from Judea began to settle in Galilee. The chronology of the conquest of Galilee by the Hasmonean rulers of Judea is obscure, but it took place during that period and was complete by the early first century BCE. Few, if any, Jews lived in Galilee before the second half of the second century BCE. Emigration from Judea to Galilee continued through to the first century CE. But it is likely that Nazareth was a relatively early settlement. One of the few occurrences of the name Nazareth in the historical record outside the New Testament and sources dependent on it is in a list of the 24 towns and villages of Galilee in which members of the 24 clans of the Jewish priesthood settled. One of these was Nazareth. The origin of this list of priestly settlements has been much debated, but in my view, it dates from the Hasmonean period and reflects the Hasmonean ruler's plan for the administration of the newly conquered territories in the north. It suggests that Nazareth was an early settlement. So Joseph's ancestors must have been Jews from Judea and could have been among those who founded the settlement in the late 2nd century BCE. Of course, they could have settled in Nazareth at a later date. But there is one consideration that favours the hypothesis that they were among the original settlers. Those settlers would have to include woodworkers, who would be needed both to take part in the construction of houses and to supply wooden furniture and farming equipment. Such trades passed down in families. And so it seems likely that Joseph was born in Nazareth into an established family whose hereditary trade was woodworking. Such a family, even if they had been resident in Nazareth for several generations, would probably retain contacts with members of their clan in their place of origin in Judea. Marriages between Galilean and Judean members of the family, of the clan, would be likely. This may help to explain the account of the census in the Gospel of Luke, according to which Joseph, the resident in Nazareth, had to go to Bethlehem in order to register. This would make sense if Joseph's family had come from Bethlehem and maintained contact with related families there. As a result, it could be that Joseph owned property in Bethlehem that would require him to register for the census there. A Davidic family. In the early Christian movement, Jesus was considered to be a descendant of David. Some scholars have considered this a fiction, resulting from the identification of Jesus as the Messiah, the ideal king, who in Jewish tradition was expected to be a descendant of King David. But if Jesus had not actually belonged to a family that traced its descent from David, it would not have been inevitable that he would be called Son of David. Simon Bar Kokhba, the leader of the second Jewish revolt, whom his followers considered a messianic figure, was not called Son of David, presumably because he was known not to be a Davidite. So it is likely that Jesus really was from a Davidic family. The Gospels of Matthew and Luke trace his descent from David, and although they do not regard David as Jesus' biological father, they trace this descent through Joseph, since in Jewish tradition, family and tribal membership was inherited only through the male line. The two genealogies significantly differ. Between David and Joseph, they have only two names in common. Matthew provides a line of descent through Solomon and the kings of Israel, while Luke follows a non-royal line from a son of David called Nathan, who is barely mentioned in the Hebrew Bible. We do know that in the post-exilic period there was a Davidic clan known as the House of Nathan, a fact that gives Luke's genealogy some credibility. For this and other reasons, it does seem likely to me that Luke's genealogy is the family's own record of its ancestors, while Matthew has drawn on something more like an official list of succession to the throne of David, to which he has added Joseph and Jesus, in order to assert Jesus's right of succession. In that case, Joseph's family would have been a minor branch among families who claimed Davidic ancestry. But descent from David was such an illustrious ancestry that even such a family would have treasured its traditional genealogy. If Joseph's ancestors were a Davidic family from Bethlehem, there is an intriguing possibility that the name Nazareth, whose etymology is not at all clear, should be understood as derived from the Hebrew word netzer, meaning branch or shoot. This was a scriptural designation for the expected Messiah, son of David. In that case, Nazareth would have been a Davidic family settlement from its inception. Joseph's ancestors would have been one of a number of Davidic families who founded a kind of new Bethlehem in the north. But this has to be regarded as a quite speculative possibility. Occupation. Only in the Gospel of Matthew is Joseph called a tecton, the Greek word that is usually in English versions translated carpenter. The context is the story of Jesus' return to Nazareth to preach in the synagogue there. In Mark's version of the story, the people, astonished at Jesus' teaching, say, "Is not this the carpenter, the son of Mary?" Matthew, following Mark as his source, has adapted the words. He has, "Is not this the carpenter's son? And is not his mother called Mary?" Why did Matthew make this change? Some scholars suggest that Matthew thought it inappropriate to call Jesus a carpenter. More likely, I think, Matthew found it odd that in Mark's version of the people's words, there was no reference to Jesus' father, only to his mother. Matthew remedied this by referring to Jesus as the carpenter's son, a phrase which, while mentioning Jesus' father, retains the sense of incredulity that Mark's version conveys. How could someone so ordinary as the village carpenter's son be preaching to them so powerfully? Matthew surely takes for granted that a trade like woodworking passed down from father to son. It may be this was the only basis he had for calling Joseph a carpenter. But if so, it was a sound basis. Now, I've been speaking of Joseph as a woodworker or carpenter. But we need to check this against the meaning and usage of the Greek word tecton. It is not completely unambiguous. Basically, it means an artisan who fashions things out of a hard substance, which may be wood or stone or metal. But in most cases where it stands alone, it refers to someone who works with wood. For example, in the Septuagint, the Greek Old Testament, it's often accompanied by a noun that narrows its meaning: a worker in wood, a worker in iron, a worker in stone. But when it stands alone, tecton almost always means someone who works in wood. So with reference to Joseph and to Jesus, this is much the most likely meaning. It's how the word was understood in this context by Justin Martyr in the mid-second century, who said that Jesus made ploughs and yokes. It's not likely that someone who worked in wood would also be a stonemason. These were different trades, each requiring a high degree of skill, different in each case. Now, in communities larger than Nazareth, there might be artisans who specialised in making yokes or wheels or beds. But in a village like Nazareth, with a population certainly no larger than 1,000, it seems likely that Joseph's workshop was the only one and dealt with all the community's needs for wooden objects. These would include farm implements, furniture, and components of houses, such as wood beams and doors. Nowadays, the English word carpenter doesn't usually encompass such a wide range of wood products, and so perhaps it is preferable to use the word woodworker. It has been suggested that Joseph was employed in construction work in the city of Sepphoris, 5 miles from Nazareth, which the tetrarch Herod Antipas made his capital before he founded the new city of Tiberias to take on that role. Antipas undertook extensive building in Sepphoris, which would have been going on in the period of Jesus' youth. We cannot rule out the possibility that Joseph was employed there, but equally there is no positive reason to think so. But the possibility may serve to raise one question: whether there was enough work in Nazareth to sustain a family of 9 or more. That's Joseph and Mary and 5 sons and at least 2 daughters. The question is difficult to answer because we do not really know the population of Nazareth. Like other towns and villages of Galilee, Nazareth was probably still growing in Joseph's lifetime, with more immigrants arriving from Judea. New arrivals would bring fresh needs for housing, furniture, and farming implements. However, we do also need to consider the possibility that Joseph and his family not only worked as woodworkers, but also farmed a small holding. There is a neglected piece of evidence that suggests this. Hegesippus, a second century Christian writer, who preserves for us some stories from Palestinian Jewish Christian tradition, relates a story about 2 grandsons of Judas, the son of Joseph and brother of Jesus. Named James and Zochar, they were leaders in the Christian movement in Jewish Palestine at the end of the first century. Now, according to the story in Hegesippus, they were brought before the Emperor Domitian, suspected of political subversion because they were known to be descendants of David. Asked about their possessions, they claimed to own in common a farm worth 9,000 denarii, 39 plethora in size, and to prove that they were hard-working peasant farmers, not political revolutionaries, they showed their tough bodies and the hardened skin of their hands. Now, while the story may be legendary, the details about the farm are so specific and precise that it seems likely they rest on accurate tradition. Presumably, the brothers had inherited the father's farm in Nazareth, and the details about this farm were still remembered in Jewish Christian circles in the time of Hegesippus. If Joseph had a small holding as well as a workshop, it is understandable that he would be known in the village as Joseph the carpenter rather than Joseph the farmer. Most inhabitants of Nazareth were farmers, and Joseph was a common name. So Joseph the farmer would not distinguish him from others, but Joseph the carpenter would. It's worth noting that whereas in the eyes of the Greeks, manual work was degrading and therefore dishonourable, this was not the case in Jewish society. The Jewish perspective was perhaps that of Justin Martyr, who shows no embarrassment about the fact that Joseph and Jesus were woodworkers. Though Justin was a Gentile, he came originally from Samaria, and so may have been familiar with the way status was regarded in a Jewish-Palestinian context. On the other hand, at around the same time, the Protevangelium of James makes Joseph a builder, presumably to enhance his social and economic status. In the same work, Mary is portrayed as the daughter of the very rich man, Joachim. It's hard to be precise about the social and economic status of Joseph and his family, but there's no reason to think they belonged either to the local elite, a very small group in a place like Nazareth, or to the destitute, those whose economic resources were non-existent or highly precarious. Luke's gospel seems to indicate that among the common people who made up most of the population of Nazareth, they were towards the lower end of the economic spectrum, since for Mary's purification after childbirth, they offered as a sacrifice two birds, turtle doves or pigeons, which was the legal requirement for those who could not afford a lamb and a bird. Marriage and children. The family tree that you see on the screen includes all known relatives of Joseph. Some of these names we know from the Gospels. The other main source of information about relatives and descendants of Joseph is Hegesippus. And the information from Hegesippus appears in red on the screen. Hegesippus, as I've already mentioned, was writing in the middle of the second century and transmitting traditions from Jewish Christian circles in Palestine. Some of Hegesippus's material is clearly legendary, but the names of relatives of Jesus who were leaders of the early Christian movement in Jewish Palestine are almost certainly historical. So Hegesippus provides the names of two great-grandsons of Joseph, Zochar and James, whom we've already met. He also tells us that Joseph had a brother called Clopas, whose son Simeon was bishop of the Jerusalem church after his cousin James, the brother of Jesus. In fact, John's gospel does refer to Clopas, but it's only from Hegesippus that we know he was a brother of Joseph. According to John's gospel, Mary, the wife of Clopas, was one of the women who stood by the cross of Jesus when he was dying. Now you'll see the table gives Joseph five sons and two daughters. I've included Jesus as a son of Joseph. The Gospels of Matthew and Luke, of course, deny that Jesus was biologically Joseph's son. They agree that Mary conceived Jesus miraculously. But all the Gospels are also clear that Jesus was publicly known to everyone as a son of Joseph. There really is no sound basis for the idea that Jesus was regarded in Nazareth as the illegitimate son of Mary. As far as everyone outside the family knew, he was Joseph's son. The names of the four brothers of Jesus are given in the Gospels, and we also know of James and Judas, from other parts of the New Testament. According to the Gospels, Jesus had more than one sister, and so in the table I've given Joseph two daughters. There may have been more. The names Salome and Mary appear as names of sisters of Jesus in some later Christian sources, but there's no way to be sure whether they are reliable. By the way, all the names of Joseph's children, like the name Joseph itself, were extremely common names in Jewish Palestine at this time. So we really cannot conclude anything about the family from the names. Now we come to a debatable question. Who was the mother of these children of Joseph? Mary was the mother of Jesus. But were the people that the early Christian sources call the brothers and sisters of Jesus also children of Mary? The reason why this question has been very much debated is because it relates to the traditional doctrine of the perpetual virginity of Mary. I can't go into the details of this debate, but essentially there have been three views. The view that from the 4th century onwards has been the view of the Catholic Church in the West is that the brothers and sisters of Jesus were not properly brothers and were not properly siblings at all, but cousins. They were not children of either Joseph or Mary. That view is important for the traditional depictions of Joseph because it allows one to maintain, as Jerome did in the 4th century, that not only Mary but also Joseph was a lifelong celibate. I have to say, I think that view is historically not very plausible. But the view that is still the view of the matter in the Eastern Orthodox churches seems to me to have more to be said for it. This is the view that the siblings of Jesus were children of Joseph by a previous marriage. When Joseph married Mary, he was a widower with at least six children. That view does go back to around the middle of the second century, when we find it in the Protevangelium of James, and probably in the apocryphal Gospel of Peter, in a part of the text that has not survived. It is not inconsistent with the relevant New Testament text, with what the relevant New Testament texts tell us. Half brothers or step brothers could certainly have been called brothers. No doubt, if we only had the New Testament texts, we would suppose that all these siblings were children of Joseph and Mary, making Jesus the eldest of them. Most New Testament scholars nowadays assume that. But it is possible that the Protevangelium preserves a reliable early tradition. There is just one other consideration to take into account. Jesus' brother James, who was almost certainly the eldest of Jesus' four brothers, must in that case have been about 80 years of age when he was put to death in the year 62. It was not common to live to that age, but some people did. So the historical evidence seems to me inconclusive. Joseph may have been married twice with children by his first marriage, or it may be that all his children were children of Mary. And this leaves just one final question of interest. When did Joseph die? In the Gospels, he appears only in the stories of Jesus' birth and infancy. The fact that he does not appear in the stories of Jesus' ministry, whereas Jesus' mother and brothers do, has usually been taken to imply that he was no longer alive. I think that must be correct, and it's required especially by Mark's account of Jesus' return visit to Nazareth, which I mentioned earlier. The people in the synagogue say, "Is this not the carpenter, the son of Mary, and brother of James and Joseph and Judas and Simon? And are not his sisters here with us?" Evidently, the whole family is there in the synagogue, but not Joseph. Thank you.